Richard, Clarissa calls. Mrs. Dalloway. Oh, Mrs. Dalloway, it's you. She rushes into the other room and finds Richard still in his robe, perched on the sill of the open window, straddling it, with one emaciated leg still in the apartment and the other, invisible to her, dangling out over five stories. Richard, she says sternly, get down from there. It's so lovely out, he says. What a day! He looks insane and exalted, both ancient and childlike, astride the window like some scarecrow equestrian, a park statue by Giacometti. His hair is plastered to his scalp in some places, jutting out at sharp, rakish angles in others. His inside leg, bare to mid-thigh, blue-white, is skeletal, but with a surprisingly solid little fist of calf muscle still clinging stubbornly to the bone. You're terrifying me, Clarissa says. I want you to stop this and come inside, now. She moves toward him, and he raises his inside leg to the sill. Only the heel of that foot, one hand, and one fleshless buttock remain in contact with the battered wood. On his robe, red-finned rockets emit perfect orange pine cones of fire. Helmeted astronauts, plump and white as the Uniroyal man, faceless behind their dark visors, offer stiff, white-gloved salutes. Richard says, I took the Xanax and the Ritalin. They work wonderfully together. I feel wonderful. I opened all the blinds, but still, I found I wanted more air and light. I had a hard time getting up here. I don't mind telling you. Darling, please, put your leg back down on the floor. Will you do that for me? I don't think I can make it to the party, he says. I'm sorry. You don't have to. You don't have to do anything you don't want to do. What a day it is. What a beautiful, beautiful day. Clarissa draws a breath and another. She is surprisingly calm. She can feel herself acting well in a difficult situation, but at the same time is removed from herself, from the room, as if she is witnessing something that's already happened. It feels like a memory. Something within her, something like a voice but not a voice, an inner knowledge all but indistinguishable from the pump of her heart, says, once I found Richard sitting on a window ledge five stories above the ground. She says, get down from there, please. Richard's face darkens and contracts, as if Clarissa has posed him a difficult question. His empty chair, fully exposed in the daylight, leaking stuffing at its seams, the thin yellow towel on the seat embossed with rusty circles, could be the foolishness, the essential shoddiness of mortal illness itself. Get down from there, Clarissa says. She speaks slowly and loudly, as if to a foreigner. Richard nods and does not move. His ravaged head, struck by full daylight, is geological. His flesh is as furrowed and pocked, as runneled as desert stone. He says, I don't know if I can face this. You know, the party and the ceremony, and then the hour after that, and the hour after that. You don't have to go to the party. You don't have to go to the ceremony. You don't have to do anything at all. But there are still the hours, aren't there? One and then another. And you get through that one and then, oh my God, there's another. I'm so sick. You have good days still. You know you do. Not really. It's kind of you to say so, but I've felt it for some time now, closing around me like the jaws of a gigantic flower. Isn't that a peculiar analogy? It feels that way, though. It has a certain vegetable inevitability. Think of the Venus flytrap. Think of kudzu choking a forest. It's a sort of juicy, green, thriving progress toward, well, you know, the green silence. Isn't it funny that even now, It's difficult to say the word death.